Tanta Audio, a division of Recorded Books, presents Born of Ice and Fire, How Glaciers and Volcanoes, with a Pinch of Salt, Drove Animal Evolution, by Graham Shields. Narrated by Graham Mack. All life is parasitic. Like a swirling eddy, it feeds off the energy cascade. Preface. Ever since Darwin, geologists have been trying to reconstruct the evolution of life from our woefully incomplete fossil record. One of the most vexing problems has been the apparent absence of any long fuse to the explosion of animal forms about 500 million years ago, during the Cambrian period. Fossil evidence for life's gradual march toward biological complexity has been a long time coming. But recent discoveries have come thick and fast. Now that several key missing pieces of the puzzle have finally been unearthed, it is perhaps time to take stock of what we know about how and why our earliest animal ancestors first emerged. This book was naively spawned at a time when neither I nor any of my fellow scientists knew when the first animal evolved, into what conditions it emerged, or even what it looked like. Now, many years on, I think I know at least some of the answers well enough to feel more confident putting pen to paper. In what follows, I've tried to sketch out how and when conditions enabled animals to evolve, radiate, and diversify into the myriad forms that exist today. I've also tried to reach beyond our specific origins, to draw wider conclusions about the probability of complex energetic life forms on a habitable planet. Although the origin and evolution of animals is very much the focus of this book, it is a book not of bioscience, but of geoscience. I leave it to others to tease apart the order and significance of specific animal groups, their genetic machinery and defining characteristics. I'm interested here not so much in the precise means by which some single-celled protist more than 600 million years ago made the crucially important steps toward complex multicellularity, but in how the environmental landscape changed to make such a new way of life profitable. In recent years, our understanding of the physical evolution of the Earth's planetary surface has greatly improved, shedding light not only on the dynamic interactions between life and the environment, but also on the driving forces behind evolutionary progress. This is a book of science, from the perspective of an academic who has picked at the coalface of this subject for most of a career. It has been a labour of love and a salutary lesson in how scientific knowledge grows. The geological slant may be new to many listeners, who, like me, will be people with curious minds, eager to add nuance to received notions. As such, it's different from other books on early life, as my perspective falls squarely on a view of the Earth as a complex emergent system comprising the biosphere, geosphere, atmosphere, and hydrosphere, which needed to evolve, just like life, into a modern form. Today, our world is characterized by its equable climate, oxygenated oceans and atmosphere, and advanced energetic life forms. But this was not always the case. This book narrates a journey to modernity that navigated wild swings between hot and cold climates, oxygen-replete and oxygen-starved conditions, biological radiations and extinctions, and asks how such tremendous instability might relate to even grander tectonic cycles. I'm an avid reader of science, and I hope that this book will be of interest to other curious minds who wish to explore how the Earth's present and future is dictated by its past. It's a subjective account, peppered with my own anecdotes and experiences, but one that I trust serves up a balanced menu of personal interpretations and latest findings from a diverse range of fields, from sedimentology to tectonics, from geochemistry to paleontology. It also contains historical accounts of various heroes of mine, scientists who dedicated their largely unsung lives to enlarging the edifice of modern science. Many of the ideas in the book are my own, some published in peer-reviewed journals, and some yet to be scrutinized. In that regard, I would like to think that my scientific peers may also find my musings of academic interest. The question of how we humans and our direct line of animal ancestors came to evolve on this planet was, up until recently, a philosophical more than a scientific question. But so much has happened recently to change all that and to make this book possible. A combination of fossil and molecular evidence has traced our origins to an intriguing chapter in the Earth's history, when the entire globe was buried in thick ice for tens of millions of years. This cryogenian period, from the Greek for cold and birth, also bears the evocative name Snowball Earth. The time before, during, and just after that frigid episode witnessed extreme changes, not only in climate, but also in tectonics, oxygen, nutrients, and evolution, that we are only now starting to understand. If nothing else, this book tries to get to the bottom of what caused that uniquely disruptive time in Earth history, and how such instability contributed to our own origins. Scientists are often treated with bemusement or even suspicion when they cautiously express their ideas in probabilistic language. I've also noticed how uncertainty can be scary for my students, who often begin their studies simply wanting to know the answers they need to pass the exams. However, the capacity to change one's mind is an essential part of what it means to be a scientist. Science is, after all, less a roll call of facts and more the measurement of doubt. Because we should view all uncertain conclusions with a healthy pinch of salt, I've tried to set out primarily large factual geological observations at the outset, gradually adding the weight of circumstantial evidence from complementary disciplines to reach a somewhat lesser degree of uncertainty by the close. Although so much still remains to be discovered about how animals came to evolve, I'm encouraged that we have come so far in such a short time. 1. Time travel. Shortly after I began my first teaching job, I remember standing self-consciously in a lecture room at James Cook University in Townsville, Australia, my arms outstretched as if ready to take off over the heads of about 50 bleary-eyed teenagers. It seemed to take a geological age before I was finally able to tear their attention away from their phone screens. Not wishing to lose the moment, I explained with missionary zeal that the Earth's history covered unimaginably huge spans of time. So huge, in fact, as to render meaningless such phrases as unimaginably huge. After all, I ventured, is a million years any more imaginable than a billion years? If we were to rise above the constraints imposed by our limited lifespans, I told the students, then we need a metaphor. If you do the Birdman impression yourself, try to imagine that your full wingspan comprises the entire history of our planet condensed into a human ticker tape that stretches from one outstretched fingertip to the other. At one end, the Earth came into being, thrown together by a series of violent collisions with myriad jostling neighbours, all in a spinning disk encircling the embryonic sun. By the time we reached the wrist, The primordial Earth has already been through hell and back, having survived impacts with other cosmic bodies, themselves as large as Mars. One such collision formed the Moon. We call this handspan of Earth's history the Hadean Aeon, because if life ever existed this far back, it would have been sterilized to oblivion after each devastating smash. Your other wrist is also of great significance, for it was then that the first animals finally managed to gatecrash the party. Your arms and chest represent, therefore, more than 3 billion years of uninterrupted dominion by microbes and, later, algae. Flightless dinosaurs, everyone's favourite fossils, evolved around your knuckle, only to disappear from the face of the Earth when a meteorite put an end to them, at the last of your 3 finger joints. A mere fingertip is all that remains for those things that seem to have been around forever, like whales, primates, grass, the Himalayas, and the Rolling Stones. If you were feeling particularly despotic, you could wipe out the entire human race simply by filing your nails. You can put your arms down now. Phew. As metaphors go, this one's not bad. But it breaks down when you get to more recent times. I mean, who can envisage the time since the construction of the seemingly ageless pyramids as a mere 1% of 1% of a nail clipping? There are plenty of other metaphors that might be made to work even better. For example, if the history of the Earth could fit into one whole year, then Charles Darwin published his theory of evolution by means of natural selection on the 11th peal of the church bells at midnight on the last day of the year. The tale in this book is about the period represented by your wrist, when the first signs of animal life appeared on the scene. I think it's the most extraordinary period in all Earth history, and I invite you to accompany me on a journey back through time to our ancestors' most formative years. Despite their importance, until recently, we knew relatively little about those times, and they are clearly less cinematic than other more recent periods. Time travellers in fiction, for example, always seem to end up at the age of the dinosaurs. I suppose it fits with most people's idea of what the world was like in the dark and deepest past. In films, mad scientists step intrepidly out of their time machines, only to be startled into panic by the roar of a ravenous T-Rex. Isn't it always the way? The story of Jurassic Park paints a similar picture, but in reverse, with ferociously intelligent velociraptors taking to today's African jungle like fish to water. We take such fluidity for granted in works of fiction, and perhaps we should, because the worlds of us and them, although separated by tens of millions of years, are not so very different. After all, they lived only 1 finger joint away. If we could really go back in time, and I wish we could, I would gladly volunteer to be the first to breathe the agreeable fresh air of the Mesozoic era. However, fictional time travel can be misleading, as the world was not always so friendly to our metabolism. Our planet has existed for 70 times longer than the time span separating us from those ferocious carnivores. For the first 4 billion years, informally called the Precambrian or Pre-Cambrian, but more formally comprising the Hadean, Archaean, and Proterozoic eons, each divided into periods, some yet to be named or defined, few organisms could even move, let alone run. The Hitchhiker's Guide to the Early Earth would probably not call it mostly harmless, in the words of the late, great Douglas Adams. If the lack of oxygen did not kill you first, An evil concoction of poisonous gases or temperature extremes would soon see your demise. Seafaring animals like fish would not fare any better. If the oceans contained any oxygen at all, it would have been only in the shallowest of realms. Slowly decomposing organic garbage would have turned the rest of the oceans into a foul-smelling toxic stew. Bacteria, including many anaerobic types that thrive today only in hiding beneath the seafloor or inside your gut, were the main custodians of the planet for eons, until something caused all this to change. For some reason, after a billion years of relative stasis, dubbed the Boring Billion, a biological revolution took hold. Some revolutions revert quickly to the status quo, like the French Revolution, which led to the weary quip, plus ça change, plus c'est la même chose. The more things change, the more they stay the same. By contrast, other revolutions like the Industrial Revolution break the mold. They not only alter the course of history, but rewrite the rulebook as well. Because it is nigh impossible to uninvent an invention once it takes hold. New technologies reweave the fabric of society. Once fire, wheels, clocks, engines, and then computers entered our collective consciousness, humanity could never return full circle. The Earth's great revolution, from a simple microbial to a more complex biological world, was akin to this second kind of revolution. Our planetary home, once thrust into modernity, never looked back. New life forms arrived with new behaviors that changed the Earth system in ways that we are only now beginning to understand. Until recently, we could only speculate about what caused life's great industrial revolution. Indeed, ever since Darwin, there has been no shortage of ideas to explain first the emergence and then the diversification of animals between about 600 and 500 million years ago. Some have preferred an intrinsic explanation, arguing that the requisite genetic machinery simply needed eons to evolve the necessary mutations. However, most have accepted that permissive environmental changes played their role too. Many have argued, and I wholeheartedly agree, that it can hardly be a coincidence that the oceans became fully oxygenated for the first time before the Cambrian explosion. Notwithstanding the importance of oxygen for most, if not all, animals, there is, however, understandable disagreement over whether oxygenation was a cause or an effect of animal evolution. Unprecedented tectonic upheavals involving the breaking apart and collision of mighty continents form the dynamic backdrop to biological innovation, suggesting, perhaps, that both life and environment were playing to the tune of something far grander in scale. I was only a student when the germ of a seemingly crazy idea began to take root. It centered around controversial evidence that just before animals emerged, our planet had been so deeply gripped by glaciation that ice caps even reached the equator. By the end of the 1990s, this fancy had morphed into the popular Snowball Earth hypothesis, which caught the imagination of scientists and non-scientists alike. I feel awestruck at how much more we know now than we did in those heady days only two decades ago. Nowadays, this once ridiculed idea is so widely accepted that only the details are worth squabbling over. In my experience, nothing reveals better how knowledge grows than the Snowball Earth debate, which has seen its predictions forensically examined one by one by scientists across the globe. Intriguing though it is to imagine an ice-covered planet, what can such seemingly inhospitable conditions have to do with our own origins, if anything? If it were not for recent fossil discoveries and genetic research, this question would remain moot. However, phylogenomics, the study of genetic differences among modern organisms, has pinpointed the cryogenian deep freeze as the crucible from which all animal life subsequently evolved. Simultaneously, our knowledge of the fossil record has improved to the extent that we can now be sure that no modern animal groups were present before Snowball Earth. But plenty of evidence points to their emergence and radiation once the snowball had melted. Most recently, organic molecules, miraculously preserved across the eons, have joined the fray to highlight how this great ice age also witnessed the rise of complex multicellular algae around the globe. The Snowball Earth chapter in our planet's history divides biological evolution into two almost entirely separate parts. Why these revolutionary events occurred, and how they can help us understand our own evolutionary beginnings, are key questions that will accompany us throughout this book. The unbroken habitability of our planet links intimately with the evolution of the rest of the Earth system, namely the atmosphere, oceans, and rocky interior, while all of these affect, and are in turn affected, by climate. More than ever before, humans are aware that we live in and form part of a huge complex system, with each part connected to all other parts by material flux on a planetary scale. We know that the constant recycling of life's chief ingredients, carbon, oxygen, and the nutrient elements, phosphorus and nitrogen, sustains organic productivity, governs atmospheric composition, regulates surface temperature, and controls many more things we simply take for granted. It is perhaps because of this that we find it hard to imagine a world before this one, as unrecognizable to us as is Mars. It's inconceivable today that our planet could ever descend into such perpetual deep freeze, yet those conditions must have been conducive, even essential, to our own origins. The fact that this did happen, albeit very long ago, means not only that such extreme events are possible, but that they were a natural condition for our planet. Earth languished beneath its frosty blanket for an immensity of time, far longer even than the interval separating us from the flightless dinosaurs. To understand such a world is to recalibrate our idea of what normal is, and perhaps to abandon the uniformitarian mantra of geology that the present is the key to the past. The great strides in understanding that have been made over the past 20 years illustrate well how the Precambrian Earth challenges our thinking because they simply don't fit with what we know from the modern world. From extreme climates to inexplicable changes to ocean chemistry, little makes sense when viewed backward from a modern Earth system perspective. How can ice have reached the equator anyway, without triggering negative feedbacks that we know from the modern world should set global climate back to rights? Surpassing our failures of imagination requires us to adopt a different way of thinking, one that integrates all of these apparently disconnected phenomena into a narrative that makes sense when we let geological clocks run forward. A historian would not try to understand the Industrial Revolution by analyzing computers, and it's important not to make the same mistake in geology by using only today's world to understand the Earth's deep history. Geology is the ultimate cold case, wherein geological detectives forensically pieced together the evidence from only the few tiny jigsaw pieces remaining after the ravages of time. As a result, this is a book of two distinct parts. In the first part, I outline the details and quality of the evidence that has been teased out of the imperfect rock record. As in any whodunit, the best way to establish cause and effect is to make a timeline of events, But this is easier said than done, when the events happened more than 500 million years ago. Nevertheless, if we are to make any sense at all of the huge amounts of data that are continually being amassed, putting our knowledge in time order is absolutely essential. Until recently, however, such a task was nigh impossible. Since the 1990s, geology has become increasingly collaborative and multidisciplinary, with new data arising all the time, from chemistry, physics, and biology. As a result, we can now attempt, as I do in the second part of this book, a plausible, defensible, and testable synthesis for what caused animals to emerge when they did. Details will undoubtedly change, but I trust that the essence of my conclusions will stand the test of time. That our earliest animal ancestors were spawned from ice, cradled by fire, and fueled by the weathering of rocks, one of the most important of which turns out to be gypsum, the soft white powdery mineral from which alabaster, plaster, and blackboard chalk are made. Here again we must abandon our precious uniformitarianism, this time with regard to the workings of the modern carbon cycle. If we are to understand the carbon and oxygen budgets before the rise of animals, we need, counterintuitively, to look to sulfur. Behind all these part-time actors in the narrative of our planet stand grand phenomena of paramount importance, for without the sun and tectonics, there would have been no revolution at all, and no one to tell the tale. Our existence on this planet is contingent on many different past events. But if we were to fire time's arrow once more, would we humans still exist? Probably not. For there are just too many pivotal coincidences that would need to swing in our favour. Would intelligent life of any kind exist? Or would animals have evolved at all? Would there even be sufficient oxygen to drive their energy-sapping metabolisms? These are more interesting questions because their answers depend not on an unbroken series of improbable events, but instead on whether the improbable is inevitable, given enormous spans of time and certain startling conditions. I sense that evolution's trajectory is contingent not only on catastrophe and opportunity, but also on long-term planetary-scale forces that over geological eons will eventually and inevitably prevail. Which of these drivers, if any, was truly essential for the evolution of intelligent life? The answer to that question lies far back in geological time and may well surprise you. Before we delve even deeper into Earth's ancient past, let's begin our journey by visiting the icy cradle of our own animal origins. In other words, let's first travel back only as far as the wrist before investigating what happened before or after life's great revolution. If the present is not always the key to the past, perhaps it makes perverse sense that I'm taking you first to one of the hottest places on Earth. The Sahara Desert. 2. Saharan Glaciers. For a century or more, evidence has mounted showing that ice caps were widespread shortly before animal life forms radiated during the Cambrian period. Although detailed surveys by unsung geologists around the world have put the case for glaciation beyond dispute, ripples of scepticism have followed every claim that the Precambrian glaciation was unusually extensive. Ironically, a good place to start resolving this icy quandary is the Sahara Desert. "Whatever you do," Max warned, "don't take the new Akshat taxi." But now it was too late to change my mind. as I watched the man who had gleefully taken my money.
Sample complete. Ready to continue?